the mathematical practices come to life in their classrooms. They're not posters on the wall, right? The teachers aren't doing the mathematical practice. The young people are doing it, right? And then those kids are outperforming peers that have been the good students all their lives. And these quote unquote young people that maybe haven't had those same opportunities are outperforming them in outside audits. And it struck me very hard.
Join us for another uplifting conversation, this time with Mike Lipnos, a middle school teacher and math coach from Ohio. In this episode, Mike shares his experience and insights on helping teachers to build ownership and agency for students in their mathematics classrooms.
We discuss how some teacher moves ultimately shut the door on students seeking higher levels of mathematics and how young people are thinking beings and capable of doing high level thinking, even if a data point says that they are, in quotes, low. And we're going to talk about how having agency as mathematicians is going to be more impactful on humanizing mathematical experiences than the traditional I do, we do, you do model of math teaching.
Here we go, my friends. Welcome to the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr. We are from MakeMathMoments.com.
This is the only podcast that coaches you through a six-step plan to grow your mathematics program, whether at the classroom level or at the district level.
And we do that by helping you cultivate and foster your mathematics program like a strong, healthy, and balanced tree.
If you master the six parts of an effective mathematics program, the impact of your math program will grow and reach far and wide.
Every week, you'll get the insight you need to stop feeling overwhelmed, gain back your confidence, and get back to enjoying planning, facilitating of your mathematics program for students or educators you serve.
All right, my friends, let's dig in here with Mike Lipnos. Hey there, Mike. Thanks for joining us here on the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. We are excited to hang out with another math moment maker, and you're actually not too far down the road hanging out in Ohio. Mike, say hello, introduce yourself, and tell the math moment makers a little bit about you.
My name's Mike Lipnos. I've been teaching mathematics probably for about 27 years at this point.
Nice.
I can remember I was mostly taught at a middle school level. And I was moved to a curriculum office to work as like a lead teacher type thing. And I did that for about 6 months. And we kind of decided we needed a math coach. And my boss looked right at me and said, "You're the guy." And believe it or not, this was about 15 years ago. I was kind of bummed out about it because I was almost excited to move past math and into something else. But then lo and behold, my goodness gracious me, once someone says you're the math coach, there's a lot to learn and a lot to learn fast. And boy, has it changed everything in my life from that point forward. I never realized that there was so much more to mathematics than what I was doing in the classroom. And that's just, I was content coverage. Boom, boom, boom. I do, you do, practice. We came from a nice affluent community. Everyone was getting great outside audit scores. So that was my math experience as a teacher. But once I became a coach, I realized the difference is I have to understand how young people actually learn math. There's a big difference. And then that, of course, led me to what the agency topic today that I've really, truly grown into over the last 15 years, that if we want our young people to be mathematical, we can't expect them to show up at a building and be told what to do, when to do it, why to do it. And for them to have any kind of agency over themselves as a learner, like it just seemed like such an oxymoron to me. So,
and maybe even seems maybe obvious now, but yet you like us, we did it for so long without even recognizing it, right? You don't even think about it. You just like, this is how it's done. And then only when you kind of get pulled into that other role, that other place, do you all of a sudden sort of go, wait a second, what the heck's going on here? What are we doing? What have I been doing over time?
And oftentimes it takes that shift to be in the classroom, to stepping outside of the classroom or in that supporting role where you do get that epiphany. I think all of us, all of those who are listening to the podcast are like that. And if they're in classroom teachers still, it's probably the fact that they have been supporting others as a classroom teacher as well to have that epiphany. I'm curious, Mike, we always ask this to every one of our podcast guests, which is your math moments. So when we think math class, think back to your time as a student, something that kind of sticks with you all these years. I'm curious, when we say math class, what comes to mind?
Yeah. As a younger student, I loved mathematics in math class up until I didn't. And that shift happened in 10th grade for me in geometry class. I was pretty good at learning procedures and backfilling and understanding why things worked. But when I got to geometry, that all left. And I can remember really having almost an identity crisis about it. I didn't know what I was going to do. I'm like, something's broken me. I don't know how to do math anymore. So when I went to college, I very purposefully, much like a lot of my elementary friends and peers, I went to college seeking something that was not going to be high-level math at all. And I kind of forgot about those years. And then when I had that epiphany about content coverage versus young people actually performing and doing mathematics, I was closing doors on young people, just like doors were getting closed on me for my future. And I don't want to do that for young people. So that's kind of what sticks out from my own mathematical experience, is that math was awesome until it wasn't. At that point, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to turn.
What you just shared, you've kind of stated it in a different way. I always love hearing it from a different viewpoint, from a different perspective. We talk about, for me, I call it when the wheels fell off the bus for me, or when you got kicked off the wagon, or any of those analogies. And that's a really interesting one as well, this idea that the doors were shut on you and then that you were actually perpetuating that with students, just the same way we were as well. And we did that because we didn't know what else to do, really, right? It was like, that's just the way it is. And until you have that epiphany, you don't actually think of it any other way. And you don't even recognize that that's really what's happening. And you wouldn't consider it, you probably wouldn't consider it a door being shut on you until you have the epiphany, because you just assume it's like, well, I just wasn't a math person, right? That's the mindset that you're in. And that's what's being sort of modeled to you through your own experience. So I'm wondering, I want to dig a little bit deeper into your sort of shift from that district office job. You spent a little bit of time there. You said about 6 months, and then all of a sudden you became that coach. How long did it take you to have that epiphany? Was it like right away? Was it through the attempts in coaching where you were like, man, I'm not really getting anywhere here with some of the teachers? Or was it the fact that you're like, what the heck am I going to coach them on? They're all doing it the same way that I was doing it. And really, for me, I always look back and I'm like, so why did some students still like my class when I was teaching in that way? And really, the only thing I could kind of bring it back to is that I built a good rapport with most students, not all, but with some students. And I'm going to guess that, you know, that might be the same for you, might be the same for John. So where and when did that epiphany actually happen for you? I'm always super curious about that, because as we hear about people's epiphanies, the more times we share them in the various ways that they've happened for people, it gives us information and data for us to maybe try to recreate that experience for more educators, right? And like help them to shift those beliefs. So where would you say, like, was it right away? Was it 6 months after the role? Was it after grinding for a long time and wanting to quit? Tell us more about that. I'm always curious.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. I mean, you go through all those emotions. I was 100% ill-prepared to become a math coach. And I didn't realize that when they decided that's what I was going to do, until I walked into a classroom. And it struck me as I saw a teacher pulling out workbook pages in chunks and stapling together. It goes, there's the next 9 weeks, right? And in my mind, I was like, that doesn't seem right. That can't be the human side of learning. That just doesn't add up. And that was the first moment where I decided I needed to do something, because 10 years ago, I would have been the same person. I just wouldn't have ripped them out and stapled them. I would have had them printed off the copier in a stack in a shelf, and I would have pulled them out. But when I made those connections, and I would say I was very blessed, because the district I worked for at that time, they sent me away to math recovery training. I got trained in Math Advantage, math recovery. Ohio State University used to have what was called MCP. It was a mathematics coaching program that was funded through a stipend from our state, or a scholarship or whatever. They're funded through our state. And that was fantastic. The people that I started listening to and talking to, and I just started, they started reshaping what I believed mathematics was. And I think that that's the big shift. That's, you got to build this capacity to understand that school math and mathematics are two totally different things. And how do we make them the same? How do we make school mathematics be more mathematics and not just practicing arithmetic and computation. And that was probably where the shift started for me, was through those programs and those trainings. And it didn't happen overnight. I mean, that was a long time. I will say the moments that were the most impactful throughout that, and I always tell people today, once you see something, you're not going to be able to unsee it. So, for example, you see a young person invent or create a strategy for subtraction with regrouping that we never would have been like, well, how are they going to do that if I don't tell them how? But then you see them do something and you're like, and when you start to see those moments and then they start to pile up on each other, you start to realize, wow, I think I've just been getting in the way of a lot of their natural thinking and actually been confusing kids. But you got to be open to think about those things. You got to check your ego at the door, because let me tell you, I've changed so much of the way I think about learning in young people that there's no room for a big ego there, because you have to reflect and change and just want to do what's best for them. You want to serve in the best way possible. So I wouldn't say it was an exact moment. It was pieces piled up on top of each other that really got me there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think you're right. I think the best educators are the ones that have checked their ego at the door and they have pushed. It's about, because I used to think of this too, is like, it was about the math. I'm here to serve math instead of help students understand and grapple with ideas and think about the kids. Like, I used to put the mathematics at the forefront as the only thing that really mattered, instead of understanding who kids actually were and the human element of them. And I think you have to check that at the door if you're going to be an effective teacher whose goal is to help students really understand the mathematics that they're doing, and for kids to come out of there feeling that they have that ability to do mathematics. I think once you check that, then that's when the real learning, I think, starts to happen for everyone, not just the kids, but you as well. I think this is a good kind of move into specifically talking about agency, because I think we are talking about agency. You wanted to talk about it here as a pathway for higher achievement. You've been sharing your experiences already about what's led you to focusing on that. I think your history, your memories, your experience has kind of steered you to this, thinking about students and ownership of mathematics. But what else, Mike, has led you to making sure that, or focusing on that, agency is the primary way in the pathway to higher mathematics?
Hey, Math Moment Makers, Kyle here. And I've got just a quick message specifically for our district level mathematics decision makers out there. Do you feel like you're spinning your wheels when making district level goals for mathematics programming from kindergarten through grade 12? Setting new goals each year only to find little to no real shift in pedagogical practice or educator content knowledge across the district as a whole? Take a moment to book a short call with our team so we can learn more about your specific district and educator learning needs in mathematics, so we can assist you in taking the first step of many in the right direction. Visit makemathmoments.com/district to book a web call with our team today. We have a limited number of spots for districts just like yours, so don't wait. Head to makemathmoments.com/district and grab a spot in our calendar now.
Yeah, I think without having collected millions and millions of data points and ran some statistical analyses on it, my own experience just in this position, I've probably worked, well, for the last 15 years, I've been a math coach, and I've worked in hundreds of districts, worked with thousands of young people, spent times long-term in classrooms, spent short amount of times in classrooms. But the one thing that has stuck with me, especially in the classrooms that I spent a substantial amount of time in, is that you could sit in this classroom space where these young people look like they're grappling and struggling with content. Maybe it doesn't look like they're even getting to that mastery level of said content. But yet, when I think about them and their outside audit scores, they outperform all the young people that were mastery learning along the way, and they had all the check marks. Yes, you did it. Yes, you did it. Yes, you did it. And that these young people are outperforming. And I'm talking about young people that are on IEPs, young people that maybe have come from different backgrounds, that maybe they don't have such a rich mathematical experience as a young person. And the one thing that strikes me is that they're always coming from teachers' classrooms that are allowing them to be in charge of their learning. And what I mean by that is that it's not the procedural process on how to get to an answer. It's the study of the mathematical content within the context of a problem and the conversations around that. So it's not like, oh, we're going to keep change flip, right? We're going to have a context. We're going to see, what does it mean to divide a fraction by a fraction or something like that? And it looks like the young people are struggling this whole time. And I often wonder myself, I'm like, is this right? Do we need to pull in and like force some material down their throat so they can answer the questions at the end of the year audit? And I've worked with teachers that are like, absolutely not. That's not where my heart's at. It's not what I believe is good for young people. We're not doing it. And they just stay the course. The mathematical practices come to life in their classrooms. They're not posters on the wall, right? The teachers aren't doing the mathematical practice. The young people are doing it, right? And then those kids are outperforming peers that have been the good students all their lives. And these quote unquote young people that maybe haven't had those same opportunities are outperforming them in outside audits. And it struck me very hard at the end of last year that the difference is that these young people have agency. They can sit down at an outside audit or a test. They could come across a math problem that they don't know the answer to, or even a procedure to get to that answer, but they're able to look at that problem and think about, what do I understand here? What do I know? What am I working with? What am I trying to do? They have that mathematical conversation with themselves. Basically, they perform the mathematical practices and they might not know the content, but guess what? It's not stopping them from finding solution pathways.
That is really interesting and well said. I tend to agree that ultimately what you're highlighting here is exactly what we're trying to work towards when we talk about, and there's some of the episodes way back when we actually just recorded with someone from the Math Moment Maker community about our suggestion for this individual was kind of do what we call the real flipped classroom. Allow students to actually grapple with problems, to productively struggle through this work and not leave them out to dry. We're not going to leave them out to, if they don't figure it out, they'll never know. It's the fact that they're able to tackle unfamiliar situations, unfamiliar problems. And ultimately, I would argue that not only are you giving them the agency to do that, but you're also in the process allowing them to build confidence that they are capable, mathematicians, that they are capable of finding solutions without being told. And to me, that is, you were talking about doors being shut, the way you were teaching, the way that John and I used to teach were shutting doors on students, just like doors were shut on us. And in reality, it's like the exact opposite, that you're actually allowing students more opportunity to open that door and to realize how powerful the human brain is, given the fact that some of us have certain challenges that we have to overcome, right? Certain kids come to school with different experiences. Certain kids come with different learning disabilities. Certain kids come with all kinds of different things. But ultimately, the human brain is such a powerful tool. If we actually allow them to sharpen that tool consistently and repeatedly, that students can do pretty awesome things with it. So I want to ask you, when you see teachers who are doing this well, who are providing students with this agency, what sort of observations are you witnessing in terms of, like, let's say even just student behavior? And really, I kind of want to get to like this, how's their demeanor in the math classroom? Like, how's their beliefs and mindset sort of, how is it impacting them? And I'm wondering as well, like, is it always a positive outcome? Or have you seen some teachers that maybe have struggled to try to turn their classroom into this place where they do give students a little bit more of that responsibility and ownership?
No, for sure. I mean, I've seen all ends of the spectrum with it. I could say the classrooms that are super successful are the people that they have a vision and they have a belief system and they're going to stay the course regardless of what the little events within a day or the day-to-day events have, because they know they have, you know, 180 some days to work through that. So first they have a vision and they kind of stick to it. The other thing I notice about them is super intentional, very intentional about every conversation. I like to think every time we have a conversation with a young person, there's going to be a consequence there, right? Some kind of feeling is going to be had. It's either going to be positive, negative, or neutral. Right. And I see that these teachers are always trying to make sure that that interaction is left positive. And I'm not saying it's a cheerleader always. It could be something where they're really struggling and they are not there yet. But the interaction with the teacher isn't about the deficiency. It's not from that point of view. It's from a point of view of, well, what can we do? What do you notice? What do you wonder? What can you do for this problem to make it feel easy for you, rather than a deficit model? So I see the intentionality of the teachers and the content they're putting up there, making sure that the kiddos that aren't talking ever, they're the first ones they call on during a notice wonder. They're very intentional with who they call on, when they call on them, very intentional when they, quote unquote, I don't want to say lecture the group, but pull the group back and say, hey, gang, what are we here for? Where's the math? What are we listening to get that classroom management piece? They're also very intentional that it's not all day long. It's only at the important moments where she or he knows they're going to get the full attention of the group. Teachers, I think, that struggle with it have a hard time giving up control. And when they see young people not producing correct answers, I think that stresses them out. Because historically, we come from a content delivery model. And when we are doing content delivery, if young people in that space aren't understanding how to get to an answer, that's an us problem because we didn't deliver the content the right way, right? So if that's what you're used to, now if you want to go towards student-centered, but you still see people not being able to get to that solution pathway or that outcome you want, then you think it's a failure. Whereas I look at that and I'm like, listen to the mathematics that's happening. They're actually talking about numerators and denominators and their reasoning about their size. They're not just getting a procedure and getting an answer. There's more math in those incorrect answers than not. It's just hard for people to wrap their mind around that.
Yeah.
I always wonder about, like, I call them look fors. I guess that's just language that I've had in my whole teaching career from my administrators to think about what do we look for in the teachers that we support. And I guess what I'm thinking about right now, and I always wonder about is, and this is like a self look for, let's say I'm in the classroom right now and it's like, what are some of those telltale signs that you think that a teacher says or a teacher move is doing that if I'm listening right now, it's like, if I've seen those words or phrases or teacher moves, that's one of those telltales or those look fors to go, wait a minute, we could go down a different pathway than going down this pathway. It's a trigger for us to be like, let's take a step back. If I go do this routine in my classroom, is it allowing my students more agency around their learning or less? In your opinion, what are some of those moves or things we should look for? Because if I'm listening right now and sometimes we resort back to some of those moves and we're like, wait a minute, let me take that step back. Or, but if I'm working with teachers or I'm next door to a teacher and I'm hearing that or I pop in and I'm seeing it, what am I looking for to be like, you know what, maybe I should just have a, give them a quick tip that seems so not confrontational, but what are the things that we look for to kind of make us take a step back and rethink?
I think my big one is whenever I hear someone say, well, let me show you. I hear that a lot, you know, walking through halls and classrooms is, well, I'm going to show you. I want to show you. And that's a big one for me when I start to hear that in classrooms. Let me show you how to do this. I was thinking of another one when you were asking. It's kind of slipped my mind at the moment. But anytime that I'm in a space and we're more worried about what the outcome to the problem is, rather than talking about the problem itself or what your thinking may be to get started on the problem. When I'm in classrooms and someone throws a problem up right away and they start talking about solution or share you how you solve this right away without talking about the actual problem, like that's a red flag for me. I'm like, well, we should study the problem just as much as we study our solutions. Like we have to understand what's being asked of us. How are we going to model something if we don't understand it? How are we going to do any mathematical modeling or put a context to it or quantify it? Those are all things that strike me. If I don't hear a little bit of confusion, if I don't hear young people talking to one another, I don't know if you're familiar with complex instruction. I'm sure you are. I really like the idea of equalizing classroom status. If we're building agency, every person has a seat at that table and every person matters and every thought matters. And we have to be really super intentional about it. You know, as a coach, when I walk into classroom spaces, if I'm going in to teach in someone's room to model something, a lot of times I'll get the pulled aside before I walk in and say, this is my low group. And it's like everyone wants to give me that disclaimer before I walk in there because they're afraid I'm going to evaluate and judge the work they're doing. So far from the truth. And the other thing I hear a ton of when I leave classrooms is, I don't know how my kids knew that. I never showed them or I never taught them. And those things that stick with me, I think that we get into, even myself, and I do this a lot, I try to stop myself, but you can try to be student-centered and the most conceptual math teacher in the world, but you can still scaffold and probe kids in a univocal way that's getting them to think the way you're thinking about it by asking the, I call it a univocal pathway. I'm asking questions that are leading you to think like I do. And I see a lot of that. And I don't necessarily know that's a good or a bad thing. I think it's a transition thing. I think when you go from content delivery to trying to student-centered to ask more questions, I think that's also something that happens naturally.
Just wanted to throw this in there too, because I think it can be really helpful in some cases, and it can be really maybe hurtful is maybe the wrong word, but maybe too much if we always do it, right? So like you were saying, I think there's times where if let's say, I think in a perfect world, if we could allow students to freely share and not be sort of funneled from the start, but then as they're sharing, it's like, how can we take what they're doing and then also kind of help at least mold the conversation just a little bit without them knowing, right? So like, that's the tricky part is like, you don't want it to be like where kids are like identifying as like, you know, sir's just going to eventually lead us to the thing we need to do anyway. So why do I even want to think about it? But I think something that you're modeling in what you're sharing here on this conversation is that it really comes down to us as facilitators of the mathematics learning being very reflective and being very intentional about what we're doing and why we're doing it. So if we're questioning and we're thinking about that ahead of time is like, how am I going to question, right? So like that anticipatory stage should go, is that going to be too direct to where I need them to get to at the end? Because that's the other piece too, is like, if there's no thought about it and I don't think about the questions, we might end up over here and it might be a very hard way to get all the way back over to here to the learning goal of the day. But it really comes down to being reflective in what it is that we're doing in the classroom and sort of using that as data to guide where we go next. And it gives me the pieces. John and I are in a document here, just kind of jotting down some of the little pieces here. Some of your look fors or the things that sort of pop out to you are really interesting to me. And I'm picturing them in my own experiences and you've articulated them so clearly. So I guess my question for you then is when you've assessed, and we're not evaluating, very different, like when you've assessed the scenario that maybe the teacher is maybe not allowing for enough opportunity for students to be in charge of their learning and taking that responsibility, what might be a starting point? You know that there's some people listening that are either in coaching roles or leadership roles of some type, or it might be the teacher themselves that what you just said, they might be going like, uh-oh, that's me. I'm that person. And I didn't even realize it, but now Mike is sort of highlighting that for me. What can I do about it? What's like we'll say like not a massive leap first start, but something small that they might be able to kind of think about, plan on, and then try to add to their, you know, repertoire. So they're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater or panicking that they're doing it all wrong, but rather that they make this small tweak to sort of head in that right direction.
Hey there, Math Moment Makers. Are you a dedicated listener? Like, I'm talking, have you been listening for a couple months, maybe even a couple years? Well, if you haven't taken a moment to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform, it would mean so much to us. It'll take you under 1 minute so that you can help more educators see and experience the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. Do us this huge solid. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And here is today's episode.
Yeah, that's a good question, Kyle. Honestly, I like to say first off that there's no wrong. There's only ways that we can reach young people better. So there's really no wrong way. There's ways that are more natural to the young person's way of thinking anyway, that research has shown us how they learn. One of the first things that I would recommend for folks to do is when someone in the classroom has a question, hey, Mr. Lipnos, I'm wondering about this. instead of me answering it, just throw it back to the young people in the space. Like, hey, Susie has a question about this. Who can answer it? Or turn and talk with your talk partner for 20 seconds. Can someone come up with a solution for that? Instead of making me the expert in the room, we're working on this together. Dan Finkel said it in his TED Talk, I'm not the answer key. We can tell young people, like, lip service is a big thing in education. We could tell young people all the time, I'm not the answer key. Answers aren't important. It's the process, or persevere. But if we then say those things and we turn around and run our math class like we always have, then it's just lip service. It doesn't mean anything. But if I truly believe those types of things, and I believe that I'm not the expert in the room, but we're in this together, then the questions are for the class. They're not for Mr. Lipnose. So I think that's a really, really good starting point, is just to say, you know what? I'm not answering any more questions. I'm going to let us as a class answer them, talk about them, and come to a consensus of understanding together. And that's a community building that builds agency. All of those little things. Remember, every single conversation matters, and it's going to leave feeling somehow, some way. So I love to have every single day a turn and talk partner. I'd like to make it different every day. If it was my classroom, I can't mess teachers' classrooms up like that, but here's your turn and talk partner for the day. Every time I want you to turn and talk, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, no longer than 30 seconds. None of this 4-minute conversation stuff. No, because you and I right now, if you said, hey, let's talk about this, we'd get about 30 seconds in and we start talking about ice fishing and hockey and football, right? That's what the young people do. So they're no different than us. So that's one thing that I do. An article, I don't know who wrote it. It was an article that was a blog post through NCTM years ago, but it was kind of rethinking the gradual release model. Right. And it's just basically instead of we do or I do, we do, you do, just flip it. Just go in reverse order. And that's easy enough to do because I'm not asking anyone to change anything besides the order at which they present material. Get young people to have some skin in the game before you start instruction, you know? Yeah.
We call that the real flip classroom.
Yeah.
You do it the other way, which is not the flip classroom about watching videos or anything, but flipping the order that you would typically structure your lesson. Mike, what would you say would be, if you could leave one big idea with the audience today after this call, what would you say that one big idea is?
Standards for mathematical practice. I mean, I think the standards for mathematical, you know how the Common Core, the language arts have their anchor standards? I almost wish our standards for mathematical practice had more of a role in our standards. So teachers, instead of getting a list of content things to check off the list, I did that. What if every teacher in every school knew that their goal was every single day to get my kids to behave mathematically? And that's a wonderful what if, but if the young people are actually doing the mathematical practices, then we're differentiating, we're building agency, we're building positive math identities. And I truly, firmly believe, after everything I've seen over the last 20 some years, answers will come. If we truly study mathematics and play with mathematics the way it's meant to be, the content answers will come. And if they don't come naturally, it sure will be a heck of a lot easier to teach them because we have young people that are primed and ready to go.
I love it. I love it. That's such a great takeaway. A couple big takeaways, I think, there. And we often say it's like looking at and trying to reframe the content standards as more of like ideas on how to engage in the mathematical practices. Like, they're ideas. It's not like that's not the reason we're doing the content standards. It's like it's giving you ideas on how you can engage in the practices. So let's not get too bent out of shape over every student walking out of the room being a master of completing the square or whatever, and more about like, wow, completing the square is a really interesting thing. Let's explore it and let's actually try to figure this thing out, right? And I think you're 100% correct. Students who are given these opportunities to think, to problem solve, where they have agency, where they are thinking mathematically, as you've articulated, they are building true problem solving skills, which, let's be honest, the last time I used quadratic formula was when I was teaching a class about the quadratic formula. And then before that was when I learned the quadratic formula. That is not what it's really about. It's really about learning how to think. It's really about learning how to conjecture, how to reason, how to prove, how to do all of these things. And I think this episode was a great opportunity for the Math Moment Maker community to kind of hear some of the messaging that we hear across over 250 episodes that we've done, but coming at it from a different angle, a different perspective, and using some different language, which I think is really important. And ultimately, what it really comes back to for me as my big takeaway is that, like, good teaching is good teaching. And when we do those things, and when we're giving students the opportunity to do the thinking, we are engaging them in good teaching and learning practices. So, Mike, I want to thank you a ton for joining us on the show here today. But before we go, folks who are intrigued by some of what you've shared, where can they get in touch with you? Where can they learn more about you? Or maybe they just want to get connected with you so that they can continue to learn alongside you in their math network.
Yeah, so they can reach me at my Twitter handle is #mlipnos, or is it @mlipnos? @mlipnos, right? And then my email is mikelipnos, LIPNOS, .com, or .kidscan, KIDSCAN, so kidscan @gmail.com.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being here, Mike. And we'll put all that in the show notes, and we'll look forward to seeing you at, say, maybe a conference coming up, or maybe next year, but you're not too far from us. So let's make sure we try to meet up and keep this chat going.
Yeah. And I would say, John, maybe a summit session on the horizon for 2024 in November. So put that on your roadmap of ideas, because I think a lot of what you've shared here would be well received by those who attend the virtual summit each year. So definitely stay in touch for that. And yeah, hopefully we'll be networking with you sometime soon.
I hope so. And I want to thank you both for all you do for our community. It's fantastic.
Oh, thanks. Thanks so much, Mike. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
We appreciate you.
Have a good one. Well, my friends, what a great episode. Awesome to chat with a math moment maker like Mike, just up the road, or down the road, I suppose, from John and I in Ohio, across Lake Erie from Windsor, Essex County, where John and I are living. And the conversation was great, talking about specifically agency. And it's, I'll be honest and say, John, agency isn't a word that we use a ton. But as Mike described agency, it really does highlight a lot of the things that we like to discuss surrounding good teaching practices in mathematics. So while I think it would be really easy for me to talk about the branches of the tree, talking about the mathematics pedagogical content knowledge, I want to take a moment and talk about the part of the tree that actually isn't the tree itself, but it's really necessary for the tree to grow, and that's the soil, water, and the sunlight. When I look at building and sort of framing your mathematics classroom or your coaching or your district around the mindset and beliefs driving for student agency, what we are doing is we're giving that tree a ton of energy. We are giving it the energy that allows it to grow and flourish. And by giving students that opportunity to think, to have the responsibility for that learning, and to have that guide there at the side instead of the sage on the stage, as Mike was sort of articulating that we see in so many math classrooms, even still today, it really does allow for students to truly shift what their mindset or belief about mathematics might be. And let's not be mistaken here. We aren't born with mindsets and beliefs around mathematics the way we see them here in North America and beyond. These are beliefs and mindsets that are learned. They're learned through experiences, through the classroom experience, through the world around us, and through their home life experiences. And the only way we're going to start seeing those shift is by truly shifting our mindset and beliefs so that we can do something differently in our math classrooms. And hey, nobody's kidding here. We're not kidding around thinking that this is going to be an easy shift. It takes bravery, but ultimately at the end of the day, really does take that epiphany, just like Mike had, just like John and I had along in this journey. So that for me is a big piece here that popped out at me from this conversation. John, what part of the tree is circling around in your mind when you think about the conversation?
I think it's the same. Like you said, branches is mostly talked about as the teacher moves, right? Teacher moves, what can we do? But it does require that epiphany, like we talked about early on in the episode. And we kind of mentioned that epiphany sometimes only comes when you are asked to take that coaching role, become that leader, take that step to be the department chair, the curriculum leader, or the department head, or even a math coach. And a lot of times when you're asked to help another teacher, you start to look at your practice differently. And if we can do more of that, right? If that's where the soil and the water and the sunlight starts to turn, the mindsets start to turn, then how can we position more of our teachers in those supporting coaching roles? Because if they can do that, if they are asked and held accountable in a way that says, this person, maybe it's a new teacher, maybe it's a teacher who you pair them with, but when that happens and you're asked to support another teacher, help another teacher, I think that's where that kind of epiphanies start to happen. And the well, it's almost like the soil becomes more rich and we start to grow that tree differently than it was going to grow before. So if you're a leader right now and you're thinking about how do I get more of my teachers to listen to podcasts or take that active role in changing their instruction and reaching out and looking at how to engage their own professional learning like you're doing right now, then ask yourself, can I shift some things around to get my teachers to take more coaching roles themselves with the teachers that they work with? Because I think planting those seeds, see what I did there, Kyle? Planting those seeds can start to change that soil. So that's, I think, part of the tree that I think I recognize the most right there, Kyle.
If you're curious about what parts of the tree are flourishing for you, or maybe your organization, you can head to growyourmathprogram.com. That's growyourmathprogram.com. And based on whether you're a classroom teacher or a district leader, you could take our short math program assessment screener. It'll take you through a series of questions. And really what we're trying to do is we're trying to highlight some of the areas that are working well for you in according to the six areas of your math program tree, and which areas might need a little bit more attention, a little more nourishment. And at the end, the beauty is that not only do you get this opportunity to kind of think through all six areas and really reflect as you do this process, but you'll also get a report sent to your email with some next steps and what you can actually put into practice at that time. So if you're curious about that, you should head on over to growyourmathprogram.com and complete that assessment screener today.
Show notes and links to resources from this episode, folks, can be found over at makemathmoments.com/episode266, makemathmoments.com/episode266.
Thank you to all those who have been leaving ratings and reviews. We so appreciate you. The math moment makers around the world are appreciating you. And we look forward to those who haven't yet done so. Make sure you do that right now. Until next time, I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr.
High fives for us.
And a high five for you.
If you are a district leader of mathematics, a math coach, a math curriculum coordinator, a superintendent, a principal, getting teacher buy-in for effective math teaching practice is top of mind. And plans only go so far. You can make, you know, detailed plans and carefully designed goals with clear objectives and key results that are measurable. But that can feel like it all falls flat if we can't engage our teachers in the work. Working with teachers who do not want to change their teaching practices is one of the most frustrating and challenging parts of our job. How do I help teachers engage in effective teaching practices when they keep pushing us away? If you can't reach the tipping point in mass adoption of effective mathematics teaching strategies, then it's likely we won't see student improvement in mathematics. We have a free training an accompanying workbook for leaders of mathematics like you. The Make Math Moments team, myself, John, and Kyle walk you through our four-stage process we use with district partners to create clear, measurable, sustainable PD action plans. But more specifically on how to also get teacher buy-in so that it drives student engagement. So step one, register for this free training, get your planning workbook, and then watch the training. Schedule some time on your calendar so you can watch it and go through the workbook. After completing that workbook, you're going to have a clear, measurable vision, action plan for mathematics to get more teacher buy-in, but also be able to hit your goals for the 2024-2025 school year. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/4 stages to start this free training.